What is a starting point for us in terms of reorienting how we think or how we appropriately question things or really expand our capacity to view things in a different way?
Yeah, a few ingredients and a few ingredients that tend to come very infrequently in people's lives. Number one is you need some quiet space alone from everything. So that's number one.
Well, scratch me off the list.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of entrepreneurs and go-getters. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring.
Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there.
So I have this ongoing question. It's a chicken or egg question. And what I really want to understand is what comes first as we move towards optimal health. Is it your mindset that drives the performance that enables you to live your best life? Or is it your health that in fact drives your mindset? Well, finally, I found someone who can help me answer this question. And it is my real pleasure to introduce you to today's guest, Dr. Hoss Roshahi, also known as Dr. K. Yasher is an accomplished naturopathic doctor and brain-based executive coach. He is incredible when it comes to understanding how we need to change not only what we are thinking, but the way we are thinking to be able to actualize on our true potential. We got into all sorts of things today, including the very cool gadgets that he uses in his practice to help people understand and feel what it's like to truly be calm and integrated with themselves so that they have a platform, a feeling upon which they can start to move forward in terms of their own understanding of health and personal potential. There was so much going on in this interview. I took down copious notes for myself. I can't wait to share them with you. Dr. Yasher K.
Dr. Yasher Hoss Roshahi, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much, Megan. A pleasure to be here.
I'm super excited to have this conversation with you today and learn a little bit more about your practice and your approach. And you are doing some really cool stuff in the realm of biohacking and feedback and executive-based brain coaching. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got here, where those are your interests in practice, and then we're gonna jump into it full force?
Okay, yeah. Well, it's a windy road to where I stand today, and I'm sure that's something that many of your listeners can relate to. I like to start by saying by the time I started first year medical school at the age of 23, that was the eighth school that I've attended in 7 different cities, 3 different countries from the Middle East to various parts of North America. So without a doubt, you know, being in these various backgrounds, being exposed to various people, I became very interested in people and how they functioned and what made us similar and what made us different. But probably more than all of that, it was what made people show up to their life the way they do, what allows people to perform at high levels, and what makes people want to be better in general. And as all that was happening, at the same time, I was pretty geeky about the biological sciences as well. So I just wanted to know more about the body. So I ended up taking naturopathic medicine and going through that, and about 5 years into practice, doing a lot of integrative cancer care, also had a lot of athletes, and I just was coming across the same question. Why do I have these populations with me, and what am I trying to do on a deeper level, on a very fundamental level? How am I helping them become better versions of themselves, if you will? So I decided to do further schooling in brain-based executive coaching, and that's really to understand how the brain functions and how we can show up to these challenges. And so at this point, I feel like I blend the art of living with the science of being, if you will, to lead towards positive transformation. I'm very blessed to say now, as a clinician, I help people transform health. And I've also co-founded an executive coaching company with my sister called Mind Shift Ninja, where our mandate is really to help train mindset for transformational leadership in organizations and the community.
I love that. And we're going to go into all of these pieces, but I have to first ask the question, what does make people want to be better?
That's a really great question. That's an incredible question, and one that I'm probably researching on the daily. And there's many areas we can go into, but I think there's two fundamental pieces that we have to be aware of. And one is psychological safety. So being able to show up as who you are, as you are in the moment, and learning from that. And a lot of us put a lot of masks and veils for society and ourselves. So that's a whole experience in itself, to be able to be in a place where you can be fully honest and authentic towards yourself and others. And the other point, I think, from that stems the idea of wanting to really connect to humanity, to the community, and wanting to be bigger and stronger, not just for yourself, but for those around you, to have a lasting and positive impact. And something that I know you're big on is that legacy.
Right.
I think those are two very fundamental pieces.
Okay. And so then to look at it the opposite way, because I think we both had this interaction with people, why is it that some people don't want to be better? Is it a lack of exposure to some of those concepts that you're talking about? Because I'm always challenged with this clinically when people are like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things again, but going back to that psychological safety, it's like, am I allowed to be honest enough with myself to say that something isn't working for me? You know, that in itself takes courage. You know, we live in a society where we think we have to be fearless and everything is, you know, we have that superhero bang our chest mentality. But I really think, there's no such thing as a fearless life, only a courageous one. And a courageous one is showing up to the challenge and showing up to the things that hurt us or scare us the most so that we can learn from them. And that's a psychology in itself that can be learned. People call it confidence. And you know, confidence is a skill. Confidence is keeping the promises to yourself over and over again. You know, the intense trust in yourself to be able to do the things that you tell yourself you want to do. Where do we learn this, right? Where do we go to learn this? I can speak from experience, knowing that I became really good at the game, you know, getting good grades, getting jobs, being able to do things. But there's a time and place where you got to go beyond that and when it's not working for you, and decide, are you willing to keep pushing the way you have just because it's familiar and safe? Or are you willing to sit back and maybe go into the crevices that are dark and scary and ask more meaningful questions of oneself? And people need support through that. It doesn't happen automatically. It's easier to pop a supplement than it is to ask someone why the things they do, you know?
Totally. And we talked about this last week, and in that one of the key questions I'll ask my patients is, what's your purpose? And most of them are sort of blindsided by the nature of the question. They're like, I didn't expect that at all today. But I do feel like it's fundamental for people being able to heal. And a variety of experiences in my life led me to a place where I ask that question and commit to that question on a daily basis. And when you spoke last week, you were talking a little bit about your story, and you said basically every time something was super scary and challenging, that's where you gravitated towards, which is not what most people do. So what is it about your experiences in your life for you personally that enabled you to approach life that way?
Yeah, and I can't... You know, that's a really great question, and I've spoke about this quite a bit with other individuals as well, using fear as a compass to move towards, not away. And I think at the end of the day, perhaps more than anything, being in the position that I find myself in and that you are in as well, where we are helping people transform in a very fundamental way, I I just didn't want to be a hypocrite. I think it really boils down to that. When I work with the first year health psychology students that I work with, I often ask them what's the worst thing a doctor can do. And a lot of times, you know, the answer is like have the wrong diagnosis, not be able to read blood work, so on and so forth. But really, you can look those things up. Being a hypocrite, I think, is the worst thing you can do. And I think that scared me more than going deep within myself. That paired with the idea of so much change early in my life, always trying to find a footing somewhere where I can kind of call my own. And I learned quickly that I have to look within myself to find that home, so to speak, and to find that connection. And only then can I have stronger connections with other people. So I think a combination of all these things have really pushed me in the direction of moving towards fear to change rather than staying the same.
And what I love as you're describing this is that this isn't just, you're not just paying these things lip service. This is truly how you live your life and engage with your patients. And that concept of hypocrisy is so foreign to your character and what you're doing. So congratulations to you on that, because you're nailing it. You're killing it in that respect.
I really appreciate it, Megan. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I want to circle back and just gain clarity around a concept. And that is this notion of a brain-based executive coach. Mm-hmm. What is that? What are you doing with people? Because it sounds super cool.
Yeah, well, it's someone that facilitates powerful and positive change by improving thinking. And the reason why there's a brain based in front of that executive coach is because the disciplines of neuroscience and performance psychology are the main drivers behind the methodologies behind the coaching. So it's really leveraging the science of how we think and our mind-body connection to allow us to improve our thinking, and so that we can show up to the challenge, and so that we can be the better version of ourselves, I suppose, is another way of saying it.
And is this similar to something like NLP or other techniques that act on that level?
Yeah, so I think NLP has a place in all of this. But I think, again, if the umbrella would be really the neuroscience community, and there's multiple disciplines within that umbrella of neuroscience. So the neuroscience community and the psychology community and the sciences that inform how we function are really at the root of all this. And then you have various other disciplines and elements of NLP that come in, which is really just a languaging protocol. You know, it's the way we frame things and the way we language things. So it does have a place in it, but I wouldn't say that NLP is a core component of it. Though I have to say this quick story. I was giving a presentation one day, and after me was someone who was training NLP, and I was saying to her that I haven't really been trained in NLP as sign up for the course, so on and so forth, but I was always interested in what it really did or meant. And after I was done my presentation, she came to me and goes, "Are you sure you're not trained in this?" And I think it's because it really is about frame. It's really about mindset again, which is something I'm sure we're going to get into.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me a little bit more about your approach as a brain-based executive coach. Where do you meet people? And then where do you take them?
I think the first place is, you know, as we say this in medicine all the time as well, is meeting them where they're at. You know, really understanding what it is that they're struggling with and where they are and what resources they currently have and maybe other resources they need to develop. Another way of saying that is I really try to understand two things fundamentally, and this is from Carol Dweck's work from Growth Mindset, and that is, do you have the belief and the desire to go where you want to go? And why I divide those two is the belief is really, again, about the mindset. It's about the unconscious, subconscious working of our brain. And then the desire is the work ethic and the framework that takes us there. And sometimes people have a huge belief, but they don't really have a desire to go there because maybe they're doing it for, you know, their parents told them to or their spouse told them to. But most often where I think brain-based executive coaching becomes quite powerful is people have a huge desire, but they don't necessarily have the belief. And so we work with some of those principles in asking, you know, what we say, asking better questions for better results. So that's where we meet them, and we try to figure out what kind of resources they need there and what kind of a roadmap they've been working off of and how we can change that map. And then we put it into strategic planning. We put it into the steps, you know, from A to B to C to all the way to Z. And we build it like chapters in a book. And like any other coaching, there's accountability to that. And we go, you know, week to week or biweekly and give homework in between and check in and keep digging, all whilst trying to really define fully the underlying belief system and mindset and the framework in which they use to see the challenges that come their way.
And how does this intersect for you with naturopathic medicine? How do you combine the two, or do you, when you're working with people?
Yeah, great question again. Absolutely. The reason why I decided to get into brain-based executive coaching is because, again, as I was doing medicine, I realized there's something we're trying to get to here, and I don't necessarily have the tools at this moment to ask these better questions or really understand how the brain functions so I can ask these questions. So I can't imagine being in clinic and not using these principles. And the way it interacts is, you know, as naturopathic doctors, we have these brilliant tools. We have these functional testing protocols that can focus on individuals' biochemistry, the story of their physiological functioning. We can give them so many different tools from the biofeedback side that we spoke about, of how their nervous system functions, how to bring them into a more peaceful, calm, gratitude kind of emotional tone. We have all of these things. But if they're not fully committed to learning these things about themselves, and if they're only looking for a handout, so to speak, of food or a supplement to get there, then inevitably they're going to not go the course of their full health. And so I really think, if there's anything I like to think I do, is that I help people learn how to think, feel, and behave or process challenges so that they can show up as their best. And it's almost the idea of teaching a person to fish versus giving them a fish. And I hope I can empower them in learning more about themselves, and so that supplement takes on a deeper meaning, that dietary changes takes on a deeper meaning, and then they're willing to take this and apply it to all realms of their life and not just their health, you know?
Well, and it sounds like that's the difference between a health transformation and those individuals who are like, yeah, I did that healthy thing for a while, and they dabbled in it, as opposed to really immersing themselves and engaging in the experience that it can bring. Like getting through to the other side is a huge challenge for most people. This is a really significant change in terms of how they are living their lives. And I too, although your skill set far exceeds mine in this respect, I too don't know how to take people on that journey where we're not addressing the mindset and the psychology required to be able to execute in a totally new way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like anything else, it's any other skill set, for example, going to the gym. You know, I always use this analogy. It's kind of silly and boring in some ways, but if you go to the gym and your personal trainer puts on 250 pounds on the squat rack and you've never done a squat in your life and says, do this for me, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to crush you. You're going to hate working out. You're never going to go back. And so our brain muscles are very much the same. We can't just overload them and expect these results. We have to train them. Maybe using the bar and doing some air squats with the bar is more than enough for now. Get the form down, you know? So the way we think through problems, the way we think through our challenges, the way we see ourselves, these are all skill sets, you know? And one has to ask themselves, you know, the listeners can ask themselves right now, when was the last time someone taught you how to think? When was the last time someone held your hand essentially and allowed you to go to those dark pieces and crevices of your mind and helped you work through it? And I think the answer for majority of people is never, if not never, at least not often. And so how we think about our challenges is just as much a muscle we need to work on and find the right training program for that, as is what we think. You know, we tell people what to think. We don't teach them how to think.
So how do we do that? Because even me sitting here, I'm like, okay, I want to think that I'm thinking the right way, and I want to expand my capacity to think. But I suspect it is one of those things that we don't know what we don't know. So what is a starting point for us in terms of reorienting how we think, or how we appropriately question things, or really expand our capacity to view view things in a different way.
Yeah, a few ingredients and a few ingredients that tend to come very infrequently in people's lives. Number one is you need some quiet space alone from everything. So that's number one.
Well,
number
scratch
two,
me off the list.
Yeah, you need some, you know, but it, a lot can happen in a short period of time when you have this distraction-free type of environment. And number two is asking really powerful questions and questions that are always pointing us back into ideas, for example, of intrinsic motivation, why we do the things we do on a deeper level, and other pieces like our innate human needs, which means how do we connect to the people and the community around us, and why is that important to us? And then questions about harmonious action. You know, how do I live my life currently that allows me to express those two things we just spoke of? You know, again, we say we want to lose weight, but we're having, bagel Twinkies for breakfast. That's not harmonious. And usually that, you know, we stop there and we say, well, that's not harmonious. That's a problem. But we got to go back a step and again, ask about identity, ask about influence, ask about the motivation within ourselves that when no one's looking and we feel that surge of excitement about life in us, what is that about? It can't be about social media. It can't be about our parents. It can't be about our spouses or even our children at the beginning. We can then relate it back to those things. But most people don't spend the time to ask those deeper questions, and therefore it makes it more difficult when we're faced with challenges because we don't have that best version of ourselves to go back and say, these are the characteristics that drives the best of me. These are the knowledge points, the wisdom points even better, that drive the best of me, and I can then apply this formula to the challenge ahead. So again, when we're taught any other skill, we're said do X, Y, and Z and you'll get there. But X, Y, and Z has to be from a very deep internal place, and we don't spend the time asking those questions, I think, is the main problem.
And so how long in working with people, how long does it take to get to a place where asking those questions or even a base set of questions becomes innate to how people make decisions or evaluate opportunities moving forward?
My answer is not to pat myself or the process on the back, but it very much depends because I've had people come in and literally in half an hour, in 1 hour, they have the biggest aha moment because you've just been able to hear their story and ask the right questions. And they're willing to be open to that.
Right.
And then I've had other individuals who take, you know, 3 to 6 to 12 months to become in a sustainable. The changes have been made, but it's not as sustainable. And the biggest caveat to those two points, I would say this, is I think sometimes another challenge we fall upon is we think that success is a linear approach. And it's not. I think this mental toughness piece is about being forgiving, loving, and caring towards yourself as you face situations where you could easily be judgmental and hateful towards yourself. That's really what mental toughness is. So the people who actually keep progressing are not necessarily the people who don't face challenges or don't face setback, are the people who can then put that framework about their best selves into the challenge, and then the time in between setback and growth is minimized.
And to really find this to be effective, I'm totally taking this in. So I'm immersed in it. But if for people to be successful in these strategies that move them forward, is it a prerequisite that they've dealt with everything from their past?
Heck no. I think that's...
You'd be like, I wouldn't have a job then.
Yeah, I wouldn't even be talking to myself because... That's the beauty of transformation. You keep digging, and this is a very maybe like a more of a spiritual or esoteric way of looking at it. But the goal is not to be perfect because that's just a fantasy. The goal is to be better at understanding oneself so that you could be better at providing value to the people around you. You know, so all. Look at the best, you know, athletes in the world. They have multiple coaches and they're constantly tweaking their skill sets. The LeBron Jameses of the world, they're on the court and off the court training just as much, if not more, than other players, and they're the best in the world. So they should sit back, right? No, exactly the opposite. They keep pushing forward because it's not about being perfect. It's about being deeply connected to who you are and how you can show up to this life. And And I've said this to you, you know, on Friday when we were chatting again, I said some of the most healthiest people I've met are people who are passing due to cancer, because they're so deeply connected to their purpose. They're so deeply connected to the people around them and how they want to show up, even while life is being taken from them. They still infuse it with value and meaning. So if that's, it's just a fantasy to believe that we're moving towards perfection. We're moving towards betterment, but there's no such thing as perfection.
Well, and you also said something on Friday that really struck me, and I was thinking about it on the weekend, and you said it's much easier for us to create new neuronal pathways related to new behaviors than to try to destroy the ones that we had previously had established. And I think this is, I think that's sort of mind-blowing for a lot of people who have historically been caught in a situation where their past was the story that they told themselves about why they couldn't move forward. And this understanding of neuropsychology really kind of shatters that core belief. Am I off base?
Nope, you're right on. And I think that's probably the number one lesson I teach everyone and anyone who's willing to hear me speak on anything to do with how we show up to life. Because you're absolutely right. It does shatter the idea that I have to keep going backwards. You know, there are select situations that may be useful. But again, for the large majority of us, it's the idea of forward thinking and forward movement that we get stuck in because we're so used to looking in the rearview mirror as we drive forward. And I'll share a very quick story about this just to maybe illustrate the point further and how simple it can be, and therefore we sometimes think ineffective, but it's not the case. And I was working with a lawyer, very, very well-established, working in a big firm, very smart individual, and he kept saying to me, I don't know what I want, but I know this is not it. I don't know what I, and he was getting angry about this. And I kept asking in various ways to try to get him to get to some of the answers that we're looking for. And he was really at a roadblock. So I finally stopped and I said, I'm trying to get you to tell me what you do want, and you're having a real hard time. You only tell me what you don't want. And he's like, I know, I can sense that, and I'm getting frustrated. I said, great. So let's just spill it. Tell me 20 things you absolutely do not want in your life. If you had them happen the next 3 to 6 months, you would just be so angry with someone or yourself. He had no problem. Within 3 minutes, we had that list of 20 down. I said, great. Let's go back and tell me the opposite to number one. Tell me the opposite to number two. And so he did. And then I said, okay, it looks like now we know what you do want in your life. And there was silence on the phone. And the next thing he said to me was, I'm not that stupid. And I said, I know you're not. That's the problem. You're so smart that you've learned a certain way of thinking that you're stuck in that version of thinking. This is not about being stupid. This is about changing your training up, right? So we just tweaked the exercise, and he had the biggest aha moment. And he's like, now I have 20 things I want in my life. When do we get started? You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's a matter of, let's not go with the old. Let's pave anew, and let's focus on that, because that drives us forward.
Yeah, I love that. And it reminded me of, I was in San Diego a few weeks ago and heard Brendon Burchard speak. And he's like, what I'm about to tell you is common sense. And he kind of smiled. He's like, but the thing is, he's like, there's a huge difference between common sense and common doing. And and I think what you just described speaks to that. And frankly, I feel like what we do as clinicians speaks to that, because sometimes people are like, yeah, of course I can drink water. I'm like, I know, but you don't. So it's like, you know, you can belittle me all day long for recommending that, but I can't move forward with your care unless we get you doing those things. And I feel like you're addressing some of those elements on a psychological level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think not necessarily our profession, but the health world in general, I think is to blame. We have these half-baked ideas and these quick turnaround programs for everyone. And everyone's looking for that next sexy kind of thing to do, where it's like, there's nothing sexier than sleeping well, drinking a lot of water, eating good food, and moving your body, many times a week. That's pretty sexy. And those are going to get you the results you want. And then we can start thinking about, you know, more the psychological nature of how we can implement some of those things. But it's not always, you know, like as you said, and as Brendon Burchard says, it's not common practice. And it's because it's not cool enough, I find. You know, it's like, will that really work? It goes back to that belief. You know, you might have the desire, but will that really work? Well, try it. Let's see. But I'm wasting my time. You know, we can go down that rabbit hole of thinking.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you also use some really cool tools in your practice. and some different ways of being able to understand what's going on and access people on a neurological level through some really, I'm going to call them biohacking tools. Maybe you have a different term for those, but can you just share some of those like full on cool gadgets that you use in your practice? I'm not belittling them. I'm super interested, but I don't know a better term to use. So gadgets is.
Well, that's what they are. They're gadgets. This is where technology becomes our friend. You know, we hear so much about how technology is not good for us, but this is where it can be very good for us. So the first piece of gadget, if you will, that I started with was heart rate variability biofeedback, which is a big term, which essentially looks at the relationship of your sympathetic, so your stress nervous system, and your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest nervous system, and looks at the relationship. Which one is more dominant in your day-to-day as you sit there? And then it helps us learn in real time feedback how we can change our posture, our breathing, even our feeling and thinking to bring us more in a parasympathetic or rest and digest state of being. And this is really fascinating for a lot of people because, again, they may know from a knowledge standpoint that meditation or deep breathing is beneficial for them, but they don't know it from an experiential standpoint until they're hooked up to objective data that shows them, you know, when you do this, this is how your nervous system behaves. And that can become quite empowering, and usually I find helps them continue practice at home as well. So that's the first piece that I use quite often. And then the other piece that I just most recently brought into practice is a device called NuCalm, NuCalm. And essentially it uses neuroacoustics or sound waves to train the brain into what's known as an alpha or theta brain waves, which those are your pre-sleep or deep meditative states. And what I love about this machine is that no one who uses it necessarily needs to be fluent in meditation or yoga or anything else like that. They essentially put the device on and the technology takes you there. And within 20 to 40 minutes of being, you know, we'll call it under the spell of this device, it can be equivalent to about 2 to 4 hours of restorative sleep. So again, this is incredibly practical for people who are working very hard, people who have mental health challenges. I use it with concussion patients as well. And really anyone who's looking to recover better. And it's the massage for the nervous system is how I brand it to them.
And how do you incorporate that into your practice? Like, does everyone do it?
Yeah, I would say a good 80 to 85% people do it. A lot of times it depends. Some people come in and they just want to use that machine because they've heard it from, you know, one of their friends used it. And then I use that as a way to bring them in and do more of the conversation around why are we actually using this and how can it benefit you in conjunction with naturopathic medicine and some of the coaching. Other people, they come in just for the naturopathic medicine coaching. And I say, okay, now that you've got, you know, the principles down and what we want to do with it and how the body can feel when it's at its optimal, let's put you on this machine and so that you can actually experience it. So it works in concert in both ways.
I love that. And when you start to get people in a place where they're really understanding this volley that takes place between their sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, are there things that you do to help support that parasympathetic side, that side that we tend to neglect in our busy, high-performance lifestyles?
Yeah, absolutely. Aside from, you know, some of the supplementation, which I won't get into, I'm pretty geeky about the free stuff that we have in front of us, meaning, again, our sleeping patterns, how much technology and blue light we're being affected by, our movement patterns, and our social connection to others. So I think a lot of times people feel like they're like, yeah, but what else can I do? Kind of back to our previous conversation.
For sure.
It's like, this is what drives the parasympathetic, you know, and then obviously breathing exercises. And what's interesting is when I tell them to do the breathing exercises after they've done some of the biofeedback, they're no longer resistant to it. And they'll do the 5 minutes in the car before they go into the home after a long day or before a meeting, or they'll excuse themselves. I had one parent say to me that they would excuse themselves when their kid was, you know, quote unquote, acting up, and they would go do the breathing for a couple of minutes because they knew what it felt like to get into that parasympathetic state, and so that they can show up as a better connected parent for their child. So there are many different ones, and we can go down any one specifically if you'd like. But those are the general tools that I keep hammering over and over with my patients.
Yeah, no, I love it. It just reminded me of a story as you were describing that. So our family is signing up, and we're doing family kung fu starting in the fall, including our littlest one, who's 2.5. And when we were there the other day, there was another parent, and he was talking about the transformation in his 4-year-old. And he said his 4-year-old now, when he gets engaged with other kids, just really calmly asks to be excused for a moment. And his dad watches them, and he'll go over and he will literally do like a power meditation for a minute and breathe and recenter. And then he'll go and reengage with the way boys do, and is doing it from a completely different grounded place. And so when you talk about, you know, you'd like to geek out on some of these free things that are accessible to us, there's really great practices that we can choose to engage in that teach this discipline and this way of thinking. And I agree with you. It does not all have to be supplements and fancy equipment that is going to get us there.
Absolutely. And the science is so rich with support for all of this that, you know, if someone needs the science, great, here's a stack of it. Read it and come back, you know, next week and we'll chat. But if not, that's okay as well. Because if someone engages consistently, what is it that you said on Friday again? You said consistency
builds the canyon.
Builds the canyon. That's it. Yes. So that's it. A lot of times we jump from one to another, and I'm guilty of this myself.
Me too.
You know,
yeah,
like
for
it,
sure.
Yeah. It's the idea of being consistent and taking a couple things and really sticking with it. And I think for myself personally, I've learned the most about myself implementing some of those tactics, and it's how I try to govern my day on the daily now.
And so tell us a little bit more about that. Like, what are some of the key practices that you engage in on a daily basis? Because you are a high performer and you are a big achiever, and you are not a hypocrite. So you're doing these things every day yourself. What are some of the things that you're doing?
So I think the thing I'm most consistent with is moving my body and nutrition. I find those are the big keys for me, that and moving my body can mean a very heavy, you know, resistance kind of training day in the gym, or can mean going for a 30-minute walk by myself, not plugged in, and just looking around, you know, it just means being connected that way. And then nutrition, eating with the foods that I know best serve me. That's primary. I find those, when I don't do those two things well, everything else seems to go. And then sleep. I have to actually credit my wife with this, because I used to go to sleep a lot later, and she used to always bug me about that and want to go to sleep earlier. And now I found that if I'm very mindful of the blue light that I'm exposed to during the night, and I put on the, you know, those geeky glasses at night as well.
Me too.
Yes. And I'm very okay with it. And then get to bed at a decent hour. And what that would mean for me, needing to get, you know, about 7, maybe 8 hours of sleep a night, then everything else seems to fall into place as far as my psychology to handle the stress. But, you know, as they say, poop hits the fan every day, but now at least I know I have a stronger backbone and a stronger psychology to face it. So those are, you know, there's a lot of other things, but those are probably fundamental that I try not to, you know, skip out on as we move through the week.
Dr. K, how would you define health?
I love this question. And for me, it's really living on purpose with purpose. And what I mean by that is the on purpose part becomes about that connection, that mindfulness, that ability for us to pay attention and be aware of our surroundings and our inner workings, and then pair that up with a purpose that drives meaning and significance in your life. And I find for myself and those that I work with that when we can do on purpose with purpose, we're living a very healthy life.
On October 26th and 27th, we're doing something really special in Toronto. For those of you who have been hanging out on the Anthropology podcast for a period of time, you know that we are driven by the mission that when people are well, they can change the world. On October 26th and 27th, I'm going to be hosting an event in Toronto called Impact Lives. This event has been designed for clinician entrepreneurs and wellness entrepreneurs in general who want to learn how to amplify their business. We are bringing in keynote speakers from across North America and implementation session leaders to help you not only become more inspired with respect to your business, but to learn new skills that you can start to implement right away. Whether you want to launch your own podcast, write your first book proposal, or create a system for patient acquisition or new clients that takes your business to the whole new level, we have got your back. Impact Lives is a two-day event taking place at the Globe and Mail Center in downtown Toronto in a stunning venue that overlooks the city. It's going to bring together 150 passionate entrepreneurs looking to take the lives of their families, themselves, and the people that they work with to a whole new level. For those of you who have been loyal listeners, I would love to have you there. There is a coupon code that I am releasing just for listeners of the Anthropology podcast. That is Anthropology20. And if you go to impactlivesevent.com, you can use that coupon code to receive 20% off the ticket price for the event happening in October. I cannot wait to see action takers, go-getters, and anthropologists like yourselves there when we gather together for Impact Lives.
Amazing. And what a perfect place to transition to the second half of our interview, which is called our KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we would have these in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got a few quick rapid fire questions for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
You spoke about sleep. So do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes, I'm laughing because I don't even think my wife knows about this routine. And that is...
There are secrets many revealed.
Secrets revealed. If not on a podcast, where else? There's many things that happen in the evening, but the one thing I am most consistent with, and I've just started doing this many months ago, and it's really been brilliant for me, is no matter how the day goes, if it's a brilliant day or a very challenging day, when I put my head down on the pillow, I smile. I close my eyes, I smile, and I do many deep breaths, calm breaths, and I feel what it feels like to be grateful. I may not be able to think of something if the day is really tough, but I look at that as like the heavy squat day. You know, you may not want to do it, but this is where the muscle's built. And I feel the feeling of gratitude and I smile and I literally breathe and smile my way into sleep. So that's my most consistent nighttime routine.
I love that because there's not a single person listening who can't adopt that, who isn't too busy to get into bed and smile.
And that's exactly why I do it.
Well, yeah, I feel like we could have a whole conversation about smiling, but I'm back to rapid fire, Megan. Yes. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
Yes, I'm reading nonfiction. I'm reading two books at the same time, as I'm sure many people familiar with.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes. So I'm reading Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life. And that's by Marshall Rosenberg, PhD. And I'm reading The Awakened Family, How to Raise Empowered, Resilient, and Conscious Children by Sfali Tasbury. She's also PhD. So those
brilliant
are
brilliant book.
Yeah, yeah.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
So obviously, being a fan of your podcast, I know that you asked this question and my mind immediately went to the things I normally say about being a drummer in a band and so on and so forth. But then I was like, no, let's stay within theme.
I love how you just slipped that in there. Yeah. Okay.
let me stay within theme. And that is this whole idea about going into the scarier parts of oneself. So I write a lot. Sometimes there are prescriptions to myself, if you will. And so I've recently on my website been posting these reflections that help me kind of work through some of my inner workings and challenges and the way I see the world around me. And I thought, you know, it was always something very scary for me to do. And I thought, what better way to conquer that fear than to put it out in the world wide web? So that's
your compass.
That's what I've done. There's
good.
My compass. Yeah. Yep.
Good for you. What do you do for fun or play?
Concert time, as my 2.5-year-old says, in the kitchen, which includes banging on drums, dancing to loud music, and making up lyrics.
Work for me. I love it. Last question for you, Yasher. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think we have tendencies towards entrepreneurship, but I think anyone who's willing to put in the work can learn the skill to become one, full of passion and pride for the work that they do. So I think you may be more like one, but don't give up if you don't feel like that's you, because that's definitely was me. And now I've worked very hard to become more like one. So there's my answer.
Well, it's amazing because your answer is not too unlike one of your new colleagues over at Anthropology Performance Labs, which I feel like is a really cool opportunity for us to segue.
Yes.
As I ask, where can people find out about more of what you're up to, which I'm going to ask you in a second, but I also just wanted to take this opportunity to welcome you to my practice. I couldn't be more excited to have you starting with us in September and incorporate your wisdom and your way of thinking and your capacity to lead people in transformation as one of the NDs who's going to be working in our clinic in downtown Toronto. So welcome. And amongst the things that you're going to tell us that you're up to and where we can find out more about those is a link below for people to book a meet and greet session with you or an initial intake with you, because you're going to be downtown at least one day a week. So welcome aboard.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very excited. I think this is going to be a very, very fun adventure.
I can't wait. And I know you have a lot of resources that people can access and learn more about you. Where can we direct them? And we'll have all of these links in the show notes.
Sure. More of my clinical side, you could find me at drknd.com. So that's drknd.com. And the socials will be at Dr. K Coach. And then on the side where there's a way more resources, it would be the MindShift Ninjas site. And there's about 50 plus articles there that we've written. So that's mindshift.ninja, no.com, no.ca, it's just .ninja.
And, stop it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I know, I have to say it because people often write me and say, I can't get onto your website. I'm like, well, drop the .com and you
will.
Oh
my gosh. That's okay. Well played.
Yeah, so either there or at MindShift Ninja. So those are the many places, and including our clinic, may I call it now.
Our clinic. Dr. K, it has been a pleasure. I can't wait to have you back. I know we're going to have a lot to talk about on this podcast moving forward. And thanks for being here today.
Absolutely my pleasure, Megan. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.